I'm Andrew Greenberg.
Oh, you're not that ugly.
I'm Christina.
And you look good. I want you to know. I want you to know. Where were you when I was doing DOMA? Anyway. I don't understand. You have to drag the bodies in when you can.
All right, we're almost time. Tick, tick, tick.
Let's make sure everybody's here.
Taking attendance.
Let's see, is this sales tax? No, that's next. That's tomorrow.
This is Designing for Games for Children 101, so
right,
thank you all.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Today.
This
you
is.
Start us off,
I thought this was Legal Defense 101. No, anyway. This is, you're supposed to be here, I think, for medical marijuana, recreational marijuana, and state legislatures.
Everyone's applauding state legislatures. Yeah,
all right. So I'm going to make an erroneous assumption, because I always make erroneous assumptions, is that pretty much we're kind of speaking to people that basically support this issue. You know, it's.
And the two undercovers in back.
And the two undercovers in back, which basically, remember, Andrew Greenberg lives in the state. You know, I am an out-of-state resident, so I should be safe. Or not, whatever. To clarify one thing, we gave out free candy, but we did not give out. We're not giving out free samples.
That's what you're here for.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was a prerequisite, but I mean, I was told it's a prerequisite. It doesn't really exist. The format this year, I mean, we've done this 3 years now in a row, right? This is the third year, isn't it? Or the fourth?
It
all melds together. You know, you got that haze, you smoke. You know how it is. But we're gonna do a little bit differently. What we're going to do is we're going to introduce ourselves. Each one of us has, of course, our own agenda that we're going to promote, and then we're going to pretty much open up to Q&A, which I think seems to be the most interactive way to do it. Oh wait, that's what Q&A means. Let's start off.
Hi, I'm Christina. I am a criminal defense attorney, and I am happy to answer questions about state laws. I don't obviously practice in all of the states, so I won't be able to tell you exactly what the law is in your state, but I can generally speak to how some of the medical marijuana statutes are structured, the interaction between state law and federal law, and happy to answer any questions along those lines.
My name is Andrew Greenberg. I'm on the board of Georgia Normal, have been for a number of years. I've been trying to mic me forever. Should I get this closer?
Carl, can you hear me? All right, that's good enough. So I'm on the board of Georgia Normal and been working on these issues for a while. There's actually a little bit of headway that's been made and a number of plans in place. There are a number of very good groups working in Georgia towards drug war reform. So I'm looking forward to talking about those. And the other event that I'm talking about today, for all of you specifically interested in the medical side of this, there is a game jam September 20th through 22nd focusing on games for health. So anyone wants to focus on games for health, come out to us at SPSU, and that's not Georgia Normal, I'll tell you. That's at ggda.org. Different organization, for which I'm not speaking on this panel.
But if you would like, I'm very open about this panel. My name is Peter Friedman. I'm an accountant. I do a lot. You can't hear me?
You never heard that in your life.
I love this woman. If she wasn't with the mustache, I'd be in so much better shape. But anyway, my name is Peter Friedman. I'm a CPA. I have a practice in California and New York. My California practice is basically medical marijuana dispensaries. We do a lot of litigation support work. I kind of lecture in regards to medical marijuana in multiple states, so depending on your state, I could probably discuss with you your both state and federal statutes. And I think we're ready to start it off.
Down with big pot.
Yeah, all right. I do have an issue with, and I will admit it up front, is that there are a lot of people that talk about, let's legalize marijuana across the board. And really, do you really want Cargill to be growing your marijuana? think Cargill is
Monsanto.
I mean, do you really want genetically structured marijuana seeds? So when they mention,
I want to buy my weed from Whole Foods.
Farmers market.
So big corporations and I, maybe we don't get along in full legalization, but we'll get past that. Maybe. Okay, go ahead.
I'm ready to start.
Your answer. Forget her.
Do you mind if I go ahead and pimp out what we're doing in Georgia first? All right. So there are a number of very good organizations working for the cause of drug war reform in Georgia. Georgia Normal is one of them. We focus primarily on lobbying and the whole state legislature side of this issue. There have been some very good efforts recently to reform the criminal justice system in Georgia. We have one very significant problem with decriminalization in Georgia in that that you actually can't decriminalize anything in Georgia. We only have two kinds of crimes in Georgia, felonies and misdemeanors, which means if you get busted for a misdemeanor, which includes speeding and possession of small amounts and so forth, you can go to jail for a year and pay up to a $1,000 fine. That's true for every misdemeanor in Georgia. So usually doesn't happen, doesn't mean it doesn't sometimes. So one of the issues we've been having to deal with is actually restructuring the criminal justice system itself. We're not the only ones working on this. There are a number of other groups that are concerned about this, including the people who fund the public defenders. Since really, you can claim that you want a lawyer for any crime you're busted for where you can get jail time, and that's every crime in Georgia. So that's been a continuing issue. The other thing that a lot of people don't know about is Georgia actually has on the books one of the oldest medical marijuana statutes in the country. We've had...
Do you have that...
Here, you got this.
All right, I'd ask Scott to have that ready to pull up at some point. You don't have it.
You want to project
around? Yeah, I'd given him a link to show off info about it. Yes, we actually do have...
Here, you can read it.
I know what it says. I was just going to show it so people, because people don't believe me when I say we actually have one of the oldest statutes for medical marijuana still in effect.
Would we lie to you? Would we lie to you? Do we look like the
Andrew
government?
Greenberg.
What is this? What?
Here. No, I sent him the link. I actually don't.
Here, plug it in. Go ahead, Mr. IT.
Wait a minute.
You're in the gaming development company. Come on. Here
don't
you
worry
go.
About it. Don't worry about it.
No, it's gone. There we go.
When was it passed?
81.
Here.
It passed overwhelmingly.
1980.
Thank you. But it doesn't show the actual vote. We had, I think it was in either the representatives are in the Senate, it was unanimous, and the other was only 6 opposed to it. The issue with our medical marijuana statute in Georgia is that the government has to supply you the marijuana.
Wait. There's a secondary issue. The first issue is that the Georgia government has to supply it with you. The primary issue is the Georgia government has to get it from the federal government to supply it to you.
Two-part issues. Yeah. And it actually did supply for a little bit, but it's still on the books. So there are a number of efforts. The groups who are involved in this effort, other than Georgia Normal, there's a very good activist group called Peachtree Normal you might want to get involved with. Peachtree Normal actually put on the Southern Cannabis Reform Convention in April this year over at Spring Forth. Great event, brought in some great speakers, got a lot of good energy going. There's also Georgia Care, James Bell runs this group, which focuses on the medical side of things. And CAMP, the coalition to... You got something on CARE?
No, I got CARE.
You don't care.
You never care.
You don't care.
Hey,
you
I used to
care.
Watch Care Bears with my son. Come on. Jesus. Here we have Georgia Care, which I do not belong to.
He doesn't care.
I really don't care. But actually, they came up with a really nice 7-page outline of Georgia's legislature that they're trying to promote to legalize. I don't agree with everything they have in here, but that's a different issue, which I'll address in a moment or so.
And the last group is CAMP, the Coalition to Abolish Marijuana Prohibition. They've been active for a while. That's PotFest here in Atlanta. Paul Cormel, again, very good group. A lot of the 420 events. I'm actually wearing Paul's shirt instead of my usual Bud's BQ Georgia Normal shirt because my shirt was dirty. Oh, yeah, the other reason to get rid of, to make alcohol illegal and weed legal is I spilled my coffee on myself, pouring bourbon into it earlier. Now I got stains. I never stain myself with weed. All right. So Those are not that I would actually use that stuff. Just saying.
Right.
You're being recorded.
So. So those are four groups that are operating. One of the things we're looking to do is actually work to reform the legal code in Georgia so we can have lesser levels of fines involved. And we're not the only ones. The judges have been involved in this, and a lot of other state organizations want to see that changed. Another thing that other people are working on is to actually add to the statute that we have in place an option so that if you have a medical card from another state, a legal, completely valid card in another state, you wouldn't get you weed in America, in Georgia, but it would essentially say, tell the police that this was legal weed for you and you would not be eligible for arrest as just on a simple possession card, as long as you're following all of your own state statutes. We'll see, there's some folks who think that can happen. There's a strong effort to get a more standard medical marijuana statute in place, to modify the one we have in place or put in a whole new one along the lines of what we've been seeing spread recently. So all of these are different groups pushing them. We're worked together pretty effectively. So I'm hoping that there will be some good changes, perhaps not in the 2014 legislative session, but within the next few years we'll get something up and out. The main thing that all these groups do ask is that at some point you contact your state reps, your state senators, not the federal ones, the state ones, and just let them know that you're interested in drug war reform. The one thing we always hear when we're lobbying is, none of our constituents ever call me about this. None of my constituents care about it. So that is one of the things we do want you doing.
Is that enough of a rant?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. State rep.
Your state rep.
State senator, not your congressman.
Right. But you can call your congressman.
Yeah, call your congressman too.
Right. Pretty much we've had, development-wise, let's see, since last year, we've had three states that have approved medical marijuana. New Jersey, which had approved 2 years ago, is now in litigation. Because Jersey statute, how they wrote the law, was that it could only be distributed by a hospital. Unfortunately, the federal government came in and said any hospital that distributes marijuana, whether for medical purposes or not, we're going to cut federal funding. So pretty much that killed the New Jersey law, so there's a referendum there. The New York City Comptroller's Office came out and said that if they legalize in New York State marijuana, New York City would basically have a savings of $431 million in both additional revenue and also no longer arresting people,
right.
Which is really nice. No longer arresting people.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Put my comments in because I am in the state of Georgia, so I'm going to put my comments in about the proposed legislation to Georgia. I do not understand why every state legislature has this need to say that a medical dispensary has to be a nonprofit. Everywhere, I mean, federally they're taxed as a profitable entity. So why not let the people be legitimately a profitable enterprise, make money because they're going to make money anyway, you know, and be taxed on it instead of this nonsense of being a nonprofit, which, if they came to me, I would say, become a partnership because under federal statute, that's a nonprofit entity. And guess what? Then everybody's happy, except whoever wrote the law about we have to be a nonprofit because they don't understand what nonprofit means.
Well, you know why it's in the statute.
Yeah, I know why it's in this, but it's stupid because
it sounds nice.
It sounds like
we're
oh, great.
All good-loving people.
Right? Okay, we want
we're
nonprofit.
Not doing
this for nonprofit
the money.
People
big
should.
Pot.
Yeah, big pot. Boy Scouts of America. Let's see what the CEO makes there. Oh, what? A couple hundred thousand dollars, but a poor little medical marijuana dispensary can't. Problems that we're having nationwide now. California, they're still closing dispensaries down. They've hit a couple of some of the oldest medical marijuana dispensaries in the state. Federal government. Remember, medical marijuana is legal by state statute.
Which is invalid under the U.S. Constitution.
Well.
No, it is. It's clear. Now, I understand what they're doing, but it's clear after the Civil War that federal law is superior over state law, and where there's a conflict, state law does not control.
Actually, that's not true. That's interstate commerce, not intrastate commerce. Right. Intrastate commerce, the state governs. The state governs under intrastate commerce.
It affects commerce, and as you saw with regular medical...
I'm not gonna argue because
you
got to go to 64 Supreme Court rulings.
Right.
Enough states start doing it. My understanding is the Obama administration is letting Colorado do its thing. Anyway.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Wait. All right.
Let's get to that one.
We'll get to that one in a minute. Let's not even walk that path of life. Okay. So, you know what is it? Last year I had them over here. This year they're over there. Anyway.
With regard to whether or not the federal government, it's correct that there is a difference between federal criminal statutes and state criminal statutes. And most of what we see getting prosecuted is all under state law. However, the federal government can prosecute drug crimes. And the way that the argument, and as has been upheld by the Supreme Court, is that whenever they're trying to regulate something that affects commerce, and when they talk about commerce, they talk about the stream of commerce that, so if somebody, and these come up in weird cases, like with the growing of tomatoes and things like that, right? So if I have this little farm and I grow enough tomatoes, then that affects the tomato market in my local area, and on and on. And so they talk about the stream of commerce, and that is how they say that they can regulate or prosecute things like the possession of marijuana, even if that marijuana or that drug or whatever does not travel between states. This is also how they regulate guns, right? Because if a gun or the parts of the gun travel from one state to another, then that can fall under federal regulations, federal statutes. So I just wanted to make sure that was...
And the main Supreme Court case on this was actually out of Georgia during the Civil Rights Movement, when the restaurant was trying to keep anyone of African-American descent out. And so the Supreme Court's basically ruled. I mean, they use streets that are funded with federal monies, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But in addition, the more important issue is that the feds can decide what they're going to prosecute or not. They can defend DOMA if they want to defend DOMA or not. They got that choice. They can have the choice on what they're going to prosecute when it comes to medical. And the fact that the Obama administration, when it first came into power in 2008, 2009, was talking about, we're not going to worry about the state issues, and then viciously went after the state.
Wait. They did. Obama came out and said, pretty much, we're not going to prosecute. California, Oakland then said, great, you're not going to prosecute. So we're going to take the 15 football field warehouses that we have, and we're going to lease them to people for $200,000 a year so that we can grow medical marijuana. And believe it or not,
everyone would have their permit.
And everybody would have their permit. And Obama came to Oakland and said, we think you're taking this a bit out of character of what we said. And Oakland being Oakland, I mean, which is, it's an interesting, there's California, then there's Oakland. Really. I mean, how many people can lose a basketball team? Oakland Warriors are no longer Oakland Warriors. So what they ended up doing was Oakland said, well, you said this, so we're going to do this. And Obama said, pretty much under Holden, he said, we said this, we don't want you to do this. If you then do this, we're taking back what we said. Oakland being Oakland said, eh. Basically licensed their 15 warehouses. And amazingly, I know this will shock this audience, basically, Holden basically said, let loose the dogs in California again. And pretty much we have had, I think there were 51 dispensaries that were closed this year in California. And we're going to discuss why they're concentrating in California and not two other states, commonly called Washington and Colorado, which have pretty much voted that not only medical marijuana is legal, but also recreational marijuana is legal, and they have not seen the federal action that California still is seeing.
And that's especially startling in light of the California Act, or I guess the proposition to legalize recreational, that lost by only a small vote, but after some heavy arm twisting on the by the federals.
Right.
By the feds coming in specifically talking about what they would do.
And also the federal government, how the federal government is closing down the marijuana dispensaries in California, and it's going to be the wave, is that they don't go after the dispensaries anymore. They go after the landlords. Right. And what they do is they go to the landlord and say, we are telling you that you are housing a drug dealing organization. And under federal statute, we're allowed to confiscate your property. So you have a choice. You either kick out your tenant, or we're going to walk into federal court and take your property. And that is how they are now closing. That's the most. They're not closing down under any statute of commerce. They're basically saying,
we have seizure laws, we'll use them.
That's it. So my belief is that at a point in time, Colorado and Washington is going to see the same action.
They already have. Washington State was raided in July.
Where are you? I'm right here. I'm looking. I'm saying, she's not talking, they're not talking. No, there's a voice coming from the floor.
As a former resident of Washington State, and I do go back regularly to visit, they did make raids in dispensaries in July, and they didn't arrest anybody. They just confiscated a bunch of marijuana, but they're doing the same harassment policies.
Okay. So it's starting Washington. In regards to your comment about Georgia recognizing other states, I can only say there's a court case in Oregon where a guy from California.
Was he Oakland?
No.
You got clients in Oakland, don't you?
I do have clients in Oakland. But it's a great, they're great people. They really are. They're just really whacked. But they're great people. The guy from California went up to a concert, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the group. But it was a kind of what I would call heavy rock and roll concert. And he brought with him what he said, I'm going to be staying in this state for 6 months. And under California statute, I am entitled to bring up X amount of ounces per month. So he brought up 6 pounds, which he had a recommendation, not a prescription, a recommendation from, I love this guy. You'll love this guy. Dr. Feelgood. Who, by the way, in California is a franchise.
Yeah, I figure. That's a great
You know, who I'm sure will be spreading out all over. One day you'll wake up and he'll be right there. Dr. Feelgood, right at your local neighborhood, And he went into Colorado. He said, based on my state law, I'm allowed to bring in 6 pounds, which he happened to take to the concert. Which I,
bad glaucoma.
Bad.
If you're going to see the band at all.
This is an important thing. And he, they arrested him. Shocking, I understand. Yeah, shades of giving out free joints, and which we don't do here. And
no, we just lost more people.
Don't open the doors anymore. Lock the doors. And what Oregon said was, we respect that California law is California law, but we are not going to allow you to bring your quantities in that from California. We are basically regulating your quantities in from our state. So his 6 pounds should have been like 6 ounces. And he basically went to jail for the 5.5 pounds in excess of what state law governed.
Probably for trafficking or possession with intent. And that's an interesting point. I can speak to Georgia law, you have laws called possession with intent to distribute, and there's two ways that the district attorneys can prove that you possessed this banned substance with the intent to distribute. And one of them is the sheer amount of what you have, right? If it is above and beyond, and it's all in the statute exactly how much, if I'm possessing cocaine and it's over a certain amount, then I can be charged with possession with intent to distribute. And if it's heroin, it's going to be a different amount. But that's one way. I just have enough of it that clearly I'm intending to give that out to people. But the other way is the way in which it's packaged. And so if somebody could have an amount of marijuana that's less than an ounce, that in Georgia would be charged under possession of marijuana less than an ounce, misdemeanor. Even though it's less than an ounce, they can get charged with the very serious felony of possession with intent to distribute if it's packaged in such a way that it looks like if I had one joint's worth of marijuana in different baggies, then that would be possession with intent to distribute because of the way that it was packaged. So it wouldn't be the amount. So this guy here who's got, well, obviously if he's got 6 pounds of marijuana.
Excuse me, it was legal in California.
And so he probably needs to come talk to someone, you know, in my profession.
I think he
might have been able to still be charged depending on how it was packaged, even if he had an amount that would be legal perhaps under, even under the medical marijuana statutes, it may still be... I could envision a situation in which a police or prosecutor looked at that and said, look, I don't think that he's using that for medical purposes. I think actually, based on the fact that he's got scales and he's got this and that and whatever other paraphernalia that they're looking at, they may say, that's possession with intent to distribute. That's not the, he's not intending to use that for medical purposes.
Just so, because he was passing it out during the concert, that was an issue?
And I'd like to make a plug at this point for tomorrow night's panel, 10 rules of dealing with police encounters.
Absolutely.
We'll be on that one as well.
Did I say private agendas?
You all know people who should be at that panel tomorrow night, so make sure they come.
All right, so...
Actually, that does bring up another good point. So we have a lot of different state regulations regarding medical right now. Every state really does have its own. There isn't a standardized system right now. There are supposed to be hearings in the new Senate hearings, U.S. Senate hearings, in the very near future on dealing with this. We'll see what does or does not come of it.
The problem that you have is that the feds, if the feds approve medical marijuana, they're going to basically turn around and say, we approve medical marijuana. Marijuana is still going to be a class one drug, but the states are then going to be allowed to regulate and state law is going to pass. There is one thing that came to my attention, and then we are going to start questions in 3 minutes, I promise, is that there is an urban legend that if you go from one state that's legalized marijuana, you get on a plane and you fly to another state that's legalized marijuana, you are happy and you are safe and you are content. Okay, let's bust that bubble real quick here, folks. First of all, you get on a plane. The theoretical concept is you're traveling on the plane. So if you went from the West Coast to the East Coast, let's say California to Rhode Island, I picked two states which are legalized marijuana, by the way. All right, you're covering a lot of states that haven't legalized marijuana, and there's something called airspace. You see, it's not like teleportation works. Just not very well from a U.S. perspective. I don't get in the booth in California and all of a sudden reestablish my booth in...
Not unless you're really smoking medicinal.
So, and it's got to be good THC stuff. None of this other stuff that's coming out of Colorado, low THC. But, so if you decide to voluntarily put something in your pocket, get on a plane and then get off a plane, you can be arrested on both ends of the street. All right? So, you know, TSA has no joke in this. You know, they just don't get it, you know. And you flash your card, but by the time they settle everything in, let's say, California, you've missed your flight. And then when you land in Rhode Island and they catch you, all right, whatever your intent was, you're probably going to have a couple of days in jail. Really. State statutes state if they recognize other states' laws, A lot of medical marijuana states do not recognize another state. Don't get caught doing this because somebody, my best friend, got on with half a pound. And right, first of all, nobody's getting on anywhere with a half a pound. You know, they're using some other ability to get it across. I'm not going to mention the company that everybody
well,
seems to.
Expressly not.
We don't mention the expressly not. We expressly don't. Anyway.
Question.
Yeah. All right, we're now up for questions. Who's going to run the mic? Are we going to run a mic or are we going to make them scream? We can make them scream.
You can make them scream. We know
Wait,
that.
You want me to run the mic? I don't care.
If you could hold on, because this is being recorded, if you're going to ask a question, if you could wait for them to bring the mic over.
We do not recommend breaking any laws.
Yeah.
Where's the young people? Where's the young interns of EFA? The ones that want to run around like chickens without heads.
Hello!
Oh, well, see, she'll do it. There, you can sit. She'll do. She'll run. No offense, Rich, but she looks a lot better than you.
Stop looking, talk.
Talk.
Yeah. You got it. Say so.
On the mic. But you can't.
Sorry, okay.
Put the shades on. You know, really. Okay, go ahead. There you go. Much better.
Okay. Hold on. There we go. Okay. So, I have two questions. The first one is probably the most important. How much did you like This Is the End? You have no idea what I'm talking about. Okay, so forget the old guy.
Oh, the blood! The bleeding! For those that did not realize, he called me old.
My friend.
The man that could drink him under the table.
That's probably true.
You know, the man that is probably... Never mind. We won't get into it. Go ahead. No.
All
what
right,
is
no.
he talking about?
No. The real serious question is, okay, so if we are here in our current legal situation, and we want to be here where everybody is free and happy, and it's just regulated like cigarettes or what have you, what solutions or what set of solutions do we need to put in place based on what problems we currently have? So I kind of want to know what problems we have and the solutions to those problems, you know, draw a line from the gorilla to the banana, kind of simple.
I'm going to say something that I'm sure nobody on this panel is going to agree with.
Okay.
All right. My statement is that a bad economy supports the legalization of marijuana both federally and state. And the reason why and it's just plain money. The states need money. The feds need money. If they can basically be shown that they can get legal money, bring people out of the cold, they are more conducive to passing legislation that will basically do that versus basically continue to spend money trying to enforce laws which they recognize are not really supported by their both state and federal population.
They do make a lot of money.
They make a lot. The privatization of prison is a group of people that don't want this to be legalized.
Right, which is one of the problems.
But if it's also the issue of you have a private entity that says, we don't want this, but you also have a state legislature, a city legislature, and a federal legislature saying, we cannot really economically support this in the bad days. In the good days, when everybody's flush, we got a big problem from a marijuana perspective. Right now, we have a bad economy. This is theoretically a way to put jobs down, raise money legitimately for the state and people, and that is how I would address this in both the state legislation and the federal. This is real money. That's why New York came out and you would never have seen New York say we could save $421 million publicly in a good times. They're saying it now because it's bad, and they're saying we don't have the money to spend, and if you continue, New York State, to support this policy, then you better find a way to come up with $420 million to fund us.
And this is especially true in Georgia. The reason why there is real criminal justice reform going on is the leaders at the state level, governor and legislature, realize that the level of state money going into the prison system, and not just the prison, the entire system involved in arresting, convicting, etc., is not sustainable for it right now. But there are a lot of lobbying forces involved in anything in politics. And lobbying is not just a bad word. I mean, we citizens lobbyists is a great thing that Normal promotes heavily and wants everyone to be the ones calling their legislators on these issues. The thing is that some voices are a lot louder and more effective than others. And the loudest is always not the most effective. The most effective is not always the loudest. But right now, loud and effective tend to be against criminal justice reform, and especially drug war reform. So that's what we're looking to change here and elsewhere. And it's also about alliances and forming the groups together to work effectively on this. So again, there are good groups to get involved with here. For those of you who've come in late, I'm with Georgia Normal. We're more the lobbying side. Peachtree Normal is a very good activist group. There's CARE and CAMP as well. All of these are well worth working with.
Cal Normal, by the way. go ahead. Take the mic away from me.
One moment. There's two things to add to that. One is one of the things in terms of prison reform in Georgia is that often, and I think this happens in states that have a large rural population, is that that's often where they place prisons. Yeah. And there are in the communities where they place those prisons, that is the economy. And so reducing prisons and it is something that often the people who live in those communities who rely on those prisons for their jobs are not going to necessarily support. And for good reason, right? They don't want to be out of, they may not necessarily like the fact that all these people are being imprisoned, but, you know, counter that against losing their jobs, and that you're going to have some people that are, you know, of course not for reducing prisons. So that's one thing. The other thing is, and going against, I think counterbalancing, I think I should say, the savings of not prosecuting crimes is the heavy use of seizure laws to help counter the effects or the costs of criminal investigations and prosecutions. So, and they happen quite often whenever you're talking about large drug enterprises where they'll run in and seize money and cars and houses and whatever they can, turn those around and bring in lots of money, and they use that money to help.
I respect that, but mm-hmm. if we take a look at Georgia specifically, mm-hmm. only because we're in Georgia specifically, right? Georgia basically confiscated $41 million, which, oh wait, went to the police department.
Right.
But Georgia also admits that from a misdemeanor, if they change the laws, right, they could have saved $250 million.
Yeah, so I agree with you, absolutely.
So to me, yes, they do get $41 million, but it cost them $250 million. In a good economy, it makes sense, okay, because we're warped. But in a bit, it really is. But in a bad economy, I'm saying I could take, as absurd, and I forgive anybody if I step, I could take the $200 million, I could basically help abused women, I could take care
you
of
could help
education.
Women.
Yeah, for $200 million, trust me, I could get a date with my $200 million. You know, I could take care of you know, children's education, preschool. I could solve a lot more social ills with $200 million and basically Georgia police not getting $41 million in cop cars.
And Christina makes two very good points with this, too. The rural issue is a big one in Georgia, in that not only is it the prison issue, there is a push on agriculture in the state for legalization. We're seeing this be more effective in Kentucky, where it is agricultural issues that are pushing towards legalization. That's the hemp businesses out in Kentucky. So that's something that we normally have been pushing towards. It's growing in South Georgia like mad anyway. So it could benefit that area significantly to actually tax that and get revenue from it. In addition, Georgia has had a long political history of Georgia versus Atlanta. And anytime something's seen as an Atlanta issue, it has trouble passing through the state legislature. If any of you are from outside of the Atlanta area, if you're from Waycross, if you're from Brunswick, if you're from Macon, if you're from LaGrange, if you're from places I've never heard of, Albany, I've heard of Albany, but I'm sorry. It really helps. It really, Vidalia, absolutely, absolutely. It's not just onions that grow in Vidalia. But you're also the ones we need talking to your legislators. And one of the things we're starting to see is that there are forces in both parties, in the Democrats and the Republicans, who are trying to claim this issue. You're seeing Kentucky, a lot of Republicans jump on this issue. And there are murmurings in both groups that this can be effective political effort for both groups, especially trying to get a younger generation of voters. So it doesn't matter what the alliance of your legislator is, if you're outside the Atlanta area, it's really helpful for them to hear from you on this.
Oh, by the way, no, he has the mic, but I think I forgot to mention this. Obviously, this is based on EFF is sponsoring this, but this is our opinions. This is not the opinions of EFF. So this is a disclaimer that should be at the front of the tape, but unfortunately, one of us had a couple of beers, which is legal in the state of Georgia. And based on my age, I'm definitely legal, as pointed out by a participant. So just want to clarify that for everyone here and on the tape. Yes, somebody has the mic. Yes, there we go.
My question is, can you hear me all right?
Yep.
How and when did marijuana become a class one drug, and what was the process leading up to that?
What was the process? The process was
he
fun.
He might have been there.
I was there. You know, you have dirt and you have me. And yes, I'm older than dirt. But the process pretty much, it came, I believe, when they were doing class one, class two drugs. I think that was in the late 40s. And pretty much marijuana showed up on the list. There were supposed to be intensive medical studies to get on the list, but the gentleman that was preparing the list didn't feel like doing the studies. There was no remedy. There was no way to contest who became a class one. It's a class one drug, which basically means it's like you got heroin, opium, LSD, marijuana, you know, all the same. You know, they're treated pretty much the same. So pretty much that's how it came about. It came about in the 40s. They wanted to regulate drugs. There was no issue of the intent, and marijuana got on the list.
And this is post-World War II, so we all remember Hemp for Victory stuff. We've all seen that at this point.
Right.
This is post-World War II, and we get into the classifications to the level we see them now. And there are plenty of books out there now blaming, be it Dow Chemicals, trying to push, get rid of hemp as a product. There are a lot of different points, but what it came down to is what I said before. There is lobbying by a lot of different groups, loud and effective, and there were certain groups who are definitely lobbying to make it a class one, and there was nobody.
No, although the groups are pretty much going. I mean, one of the groups was the railroads. They're not effective very much as a lobby anymore.
And another important group. Oh,
the paper industry was a huge thing, and people in newspapers can be made into paper, and they saw that as a threat.
Right.
Another important group at the time was the Narcotics Bureau Administration, what was his group? This was pre-DEA.
Right.
And he was definitely, there was definitely a push for the power control. Hoover wasn't going to take a lot of the drug enforcement, and the NA, I forget what the...
NEA, I think.
Something, NEA, no. Whatever the Narcotics Administration was at the time was definitely doing a power play to get more strength. So another group that was heavily lobbying for the classification.
Right. Take the mic away from the man. Mm-hmm. Oh, right next to him. Yep. Jeez, what is this, pass the mic? Go ahead.
So actually around the time that marijuana was made illegal, there was this very quotable fellow named Harry J. Anslinger.
Anslinger,
yes.
Thank you.
Look him up on WikiQuote, you'll be frightened.
William S. Burroughs talking about him, that's the best.
But it's hard to hear his quotes and see how drug enforcement goes down and not feel that there's a certain racist element to it. And I'm just wondering, could that be why they targeted Oakland first?
Do remember that the only only Major League Baseball no-hitter thrown by a pitcher on LSD was by an Oakland A's pitcher. Just saying.
And they're proud of it, and they should be. That's all I say about that. Oakland is a conversation well beyond this well beyond the scope of this. And by the way, I have to say, people in California, Oakland, you are the best. That's all I'm going to say. Don't come after me. You have a tendency to. Yes.
This is more of an agriculture question. If it is legalized across the country for medical or recreational, are there, I don't know if there's already laws in place regarding like transporting seeds and plant life from one state to another that might harm the indigenous species of a certain state, and if there would be laws regarding that.
Well, first of all, seed seems to have gotten past everybody, but don't use the U.S. Postal Service because they're a little
picky.
Unless
you're sending bird seed.
Yeah, bird seed is
I'm assuming it's legalized.
Okay, no, I understand. But okay. What it is, the Department of Agriculture really hasn't had to address the issue, okay? The thing that would bother me the most is Monsanto, basically. I mean, I have been told that in Arizona, Monsanto has two major warehouses already built, ready to grow marijuana once it becomes legal. They cannot do it because they're a public company, and their attorneys have said, we're not going to let you file with the SEC and say, and by the way, we're growing marijuana in a legal state, because they'll just get destroyed. I mean, it really comes down to, you know, that's why a lot of growers don't want it to be legalized, because they don't want to go against those type of large corporations.
My understanding on what plants are allowed in the U.S. and aren't is it's a list of what is not allowed.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong. This is definitely not my area of expertise. This is just what I've been told in the past. And it's what's not on that list. What is banned on that list is what can't come in. And if these things aren't banned on the list, then theoretically they can come in.
No.
Hawaii does some weird things.
Yeah, but it's still they're still.
They already got everything they need down there anyway.
California has some pretty a lot of restrictions on what fruits and vegetables and things can
past
come in.
Each other.
Yeah,
right. But I don't think it's. I don't think marijuana is gonna. That would not be the biggest worry I would have in regards to basic. If it became totally legal and I could grow it, I would say that this going cross state borders would not be that big an issue for me.
Next question.
I got a question here. As opposed to looking at American culture, European and Canadian, why is there some evangelical aspect to pot as opposed to alcohol during prohibition? And basically, how do we change American belief in American culture as a whole?
Well, remember that almost every survey now says that the majority of Americans not only support medical, they support legalization. I don't see any surveys now that don't show a majority in favor of actual legalization. Sure. And I go back to what I said before. It's the lobbying, it's the voices that are being raised and who's doing it effectively. There are a lot of Americans who do not care on this issue, even though they favor it, and therefore their voices aren't loud or effective. So it's creating those. I like what MPAA has done. They have been both loud and effective, and that's what we need to see more of.
Right. And I think no offense, as my father's generation, you know, and you start getting down to younger and younger generations, I think generationally speaking, marijuana is much more acceptable than even my generation or above. You know, it's just
dirt generation.
Yeah, the dirt generation.
Man, you gave me such ammo.
I know.
Speaking of gun
laws. No. That's tomorrow night.
No char with that. I own those.
Hi guys, and good evening.
Hi.
The term legalization has popped up here a lot of times. In online discussions, I've discovered that many people don't have the same definition for that word. Would the panel address and define the term legalization so that we can all understand the same things? A lot of people are just pushing for not being busted on the street with a joint in your pocket. Others are talking about buying a pack of marijuana cigarettes in the 7-Eleven down the street.
But I would say that over in that side, they're going to be much more minute about the definition. I'm not pointing at people. Not at all. I'm saying legalization, from my perspective, is that under state statute or federal statute, it is no longer a misdemeanor crime to carry an ounce to 2 ounces. Okay, that to me is legalization. Okay, medical marijuana.
I would define it as the decriminalization. So however it is, as a lawyer, whether you're allowed to carry it in little baggies or whether you go and buy it at the 7-Eleven, as a lawyer, once you are no longer in trouble if you do it, however you do it, then we'd consider that to be
right. And from an accountant, I'm just basically into numbers. Give me a lesson to it.
Sadly, on a lobbying point of view, there are very different terms, and the one you left out is decriminalization. That's also important. So legalization is bad to just have as a term itself. It's legalization of what? Legalization of possession, legalization of a small amount of possession, legalization of medical marijuana of marijuana for a medical purpose under a prescription, legalization of the ability to grow your own.
Can't get a prescription.
So all of these, legalization has to be of something. So what are you legalizing? So the other issue is what's decrim? Decriminalization is another important issue. And as I mentioned, in Georgia, we have the issue that even if you've got a joint, you can go to the jail for a year and be fined $1,000. Doesn't happen often, but a judge can do that to you. We don't have an option for decriminalization in Georgia until we get another level of crime.
So in your view, there's no part for consumer protections in this?
What do you mean?
We talked about commercial production.
Can you get on the mic when you're talking? Sorry. Oh, never mind. Go ahead. Just yell. Scream. We'll repeat. I'll repeat it. Right.
Go ahead.
See the public gets what they're paying for.
Fraud. Okay. He asked about consumer protection for people getting what they're buying for, being told it's something and actually getting that. Fraud's fraud, no matter what you're selling.
What's the difference?
Well, I let the lawyer talk to this one.
Well, I mean, I think that in terms of consumer protection, and now you're starting to get out of the realm of criminal law, but the Federal Drug Administration is really, I mean, just like anything else, once it's decriminalized, if there are consumer protections when it comes to whether it's medical or whether you're talking about it as tobacco or whatever, the FDA is going to put, you know, may or may not choose to regulate that. Or so if there were regulations concerning purity or whatever, I would think that they would probably come from a federal agency along the lines of that.
Actually, under state, every state legislation I've seen discusses purity and discusses what's an acceptable THC level. So it's within the statute. But, you know, if you're in a state that it's legal and you have a recommendation because you can't get a prescription, and you go to your local dispensary and you say, I want a quarter of ounce based on your recommendation, you get it and you take it home and it's oregano, well, guess what? You know, that's a violation of the state's Consumer Act. And yeah, I mean, you can prosecute. So I'm not...
Well, I whenever I hear prosecute, I normally think criminal prosecutions. No, would probably be
civil action.
Civil action. In that case, yeah.
Well, just like a typical theft.
And in addition, I have not heard, I could be wrong on this, I've not heard of any dispensaries saying marijuana cures or is good for these illnesses. They say get something from a doctor and then we'll fill it. And doctors can give you a prescription for whatever. I mean, that's their judgment.
They can't give prescriptions.
Oh, recommendation. Yes,
they can
thank
only
you.
Give recommendation.
Thank you. Recommendation. They give you your rec, not your script.
Because then they would be a drug dealer.
So,
you see, if they give you a prescription, that's why I keep harping on this.
So you don't usually see the people on the commercial side of this making claims about the efficacy of their products for medical purposes.
Right. Okay. Who has the mic? Somebody has the mic.
I have a question for the criminal defense attorney.
Over there.
Uh-oh.
You're in trouble.
So, if you get pulled over by a police officer for, say, like, a minor... Stand up.
There you go.
For, like, a minor traffic violation, and they claim that they smell marijuana in your car, is that legal precedent for probable cause, and can they search your car?
Okay, so there's a couple things that's pretty specific, so I need to let you know that I'm not offering legal advice, and I'm not your lawyer.
Oh, the disclaimer right on the table.
Right?
I understand.
But in terms of smelling marijuana, now I don't know whether this is something that would happen in each and every state, but there is something called the plain view doctrine. So if the police come in and search my house looking for one thing and they happen to see something else that's illegal, they're allowed to arrest me for that other thing, even though their warrant wasn't looking for that, because we're not expecting police officers to ignore things that they see if they're somewhere where they're legally allowed to be. Now, that has been expanded in the realm of the smell of marijuana is pretty distinctive, and cops get trained on the smell not only of the smoke, but of the unsmoked plant. So they're going to go into court and they're going to say, look, I can smell that. I know what that is. And so they have something called the plain smell doctrine. So if
it's not a Dragon Con doctrine, I'm sorry.
So if a police officer is somewhere where they're legally allowed to be, you know, and they smell that, and that can give rise to probable cause to conduct a more thorough search of a car, a house, whatever they, wherever they may reasonably think that that smell may be coming from.
And tomorrow at 8:30, we show 10 rules for dealing with police encounters, and we show the video about the rolling your window up or not.
Yeah,
so,
I would. Yeah,
don't roll it up.
So again, not a lawyer, but I would definitely recommend that panel. It'll talk. It does talk about what your rights are, how to handle police encounters. It's. I'm not on the panel, but it's good.
Yeah, we're dragging around.
Appreciate it.
All right, who's got the mic? Up. Oh, it almost moved.
I definitely
like the shirt.
Thank you. I definitely grew up buying into a lot of the misinformation and just frankly lies about marijuana with the, you know, war on drugs. But obviously later in life, kind of, you know, seeing the truth behind it.
He's wearing a cannabis shirt, folks.
Where's yours? It's really great to see groups like this. This is a small group, but even just at an event like this is awesome. And I was just wondering what I could do personally to get involved with something like Georgia Normal.
What
I just really don't know where to start.
What state do you live in?
I live in Georgia.
All right.
There you go. Georgia Normal and living in Tennessee, I don't know if that works.
Easiest run right now, Sharon Rivert runs a great group, Peachtree Normal. Very easy to find them on Facebook. Very active on Facebook. Peachtree Normal. For everybody here, go join that one on Facebook. We work with them very closely. And there's also Normal is a national organization that everybody here can join. They've been around for a while. They've been doing the fight for a while. Sometimes they've been more effective than at other times. Right now, I think with them and MPAA working together and working on the same issues, we're seeing a lot more effectiveness. There's an old comment that MLK was a lot more successful because the folks in power were afraid of Malcolm X. Yeah. Therefore, it helps to have multiple groups pushing for the same cause to get something to happen. So all of these groups are well worth joining. So check out Peachtree Normal first, and check out Normal on the national level too.
Thank you.
There's a Tennessee Normal. I mean, pretty much
there are state chapters pretty much everywhere.
I've never seen
TNNormal.org. There
right.
you go.
Tennessee.
Apparently, talk to that person.
Right. Go ahead. Who's got a mic? Here we go.
I just had a question regarding how companies have been treating people in states with medical marijuana and drug testing. Because I, you know, in a lot of states, like I'm from Tennessee, which means we're probably second to last to get medical marijuana. But I'm wondering,
I'm curious,
like, how
what you think the last state would be.
No, I don't. I don't want to know.
Utah. I think
Utah.
Remember that Tennessee does have a strong agricultural lobby.
They do, trust me, but there's also a very strong anti.
We're not going to get.
But
we all love Tennessee in the EFF.
There we go.
We're covering all bases here.
Go Vols.
Go ahead.
But how have like companies been dealing with medical marijuana in regards to drug testing? Because I know, like, you know, a person can be have a bad OxyContin problem, but if they have a prescription, most companies may ignore that on the drug test, but marijuana is, for drug testing, is a lot more easier to detect, and I don't know how they've been. I've been curious how they've been handling it.
I can the companies that I discuss marijuana with in the HR department, pretty much are, if you're handling heavy machinery, you're not on anything.
Yeah,
I don't care if you
legal
have a prescription. Does not matter.
It's an insurance issue.
It's all
for
insurance.
Those guys.
So, but
and remember, most states are right-to-work states, which means that you can be fired for any reason or no reason with certain exceptions. Now, medical problems are something that you can't get fired for cops. So they couldn't fire you because you have a medical problem, but if, I think you see where I'm headed with that. They have a lot of leeway.
Right.
And remember that...
you got federal law versus state law, and federal law says this is a drug.
Right.
So your recommendation does, in regards to marijuana, doesn't work.
Companies drug test for specific reasons. I mean, they're not going to spend that money unless they have a specific reason to do it. It could be insurance. It could be workers' comp issues. It could be because they've got secret clearances. It could be because they're dealing with specific federal issues that they've got to keep in mind. So that's why they do it. So as long as those are in place, they'll continue to.
One more question.
How do we get it legal? All righty. So... I'm from New York State, and one thing that's actually not
so
very...
So he provided the medical marijuana for days, then.
That's
one thing that's not very clear to a lot of people when they read articles and stuff online is they talk about, like Bloomberg was saying, they're going to stop and frisking people in New York City, which that only encompasses the five boroughs, you know, Queens, Bronx, Staten Island, and Manhattan.
I know the boroughs very well.
So, but that it's only the boroughs that when they're talking about New York City, they're not talking about Long Island, where I'm from, or New York State. And my question is it's pretty vague. And is there going to be any type of difference between New York City and the rest of New York State then, because they're only claiming New York City?
You're talking about stop and frisk.
Yeah.
Stop and frisk.
Stop and frisk for New York City. Basically, Bloomberg said, for New York City, we can't afford it anymore, so we're stopping and frisk. But on the other hand, they haven't stopped it yet. But that's their proposal. In regards to Nassau, Suffolk, or the rest of New York State, you know, stop and frisk is there. You know, it's part of the law. Until New York State, and it's in front of the New York State legislature to legalize it, that's what you got. My advice to you would be move to Brooklyn.
Thank you.
They would, in terms of the going along with the stop and frisk, part of the impetus behind that was that there were allegations that they were stopping and frisking people of color at much higher rates than they were Caucasians, and so it's.
What do you mean? It was totally true.
and so while they may be claiming financial benefits, I would argue that I think that there's a little bit more to it than just the money. There was a pretty big black eye for the city.
Well, New York has had so many black eyes.
You know, it had that many heads.
We have a lot of it. I really think, I mean, yes, it was discriminatory in nature. But everybody that brought a suit in regards to stop and frisk in New York and tried to say it was discriminatory, didn't win the suit. So, you know, I mean, it's like you can... I sit there and I say the city's screaming bankruptcy again. So they're going to do whatever they can.
And to learn where police can and cannot touch you, come join us tomorrow at 10 Rules for Dealing with Police Encounters.
I did mention in the morning about you. Thank you very much. We're out of time. Please return the mic.
Always a pleasure, sir.
Always a pleasure.